Good morning. Please, let's take these next few moments together to be present in the presence, in a comfortable position. Please allow that temple of God, which is your body, to feel as deeply relaxed as it can be. And breath by breath, let's feel perhaps the truth of the words we just sang. That the greatest thing in all my life is not my grievances and preferences, not my opinions, and not my knowledge of worldly things, but my knowledge of the Christ, my love of the Christ Spirit, and whatever service I can give in that Spirit. So breath by breath, let there be less of me and more of God. Breath by breath, God, let there be less of me in my concerns and more of you. May I see you in the eyes of all I encounter. May I love you in all I see. May I know you through all I witness, and may I serve you through all whom my life touches. Let us feel the truth of that message together, breath by breath. We'll take some breaths together just to feel that Christ presence within and reconnect with that which connects us all. And now, Blessed Spirit, may we use our time together to be ever more present with you and with each other in that Christ consciousness. You can sing along on the chorus as you're moved of this. Let your heart stay open, even in the pain, even in the rain, you know the sun will shine.
Let your heart stay open, even on the days, even when the ways of the world have us crying. Let your heart stay open, open to love, open to love. Let your heart stay open, open to love,
to love,
open to love,
to love.
Let your heart stay open, even with the hate, even with the state of this world all around. Let your heart stay open, even when it breaks, even when it shakes with a crying sound. Let your heart
stay open,
open to love,
open to love.
Let your heart
stay open,
open to love,
open to
love. Let your heart stay open, even through the night, even when the light seems like it's dead and gone.
Let your heart stay open,
even when you doubt, even when your shout longs to say you're done.
Let your heart stay open.
Open to love,
open to love.
Let your heart
stay open,
open to
love,
open to love,
open to love,
open to love.
It's wonderful to be here with you at Unity of Everett once again. And Cindy, it was wonderful to hear you sing along with that song.
I did not mean for that to happen.
That just tells me something very positive, because I know Cindy doesn't love to be heard singing, but your heart wanted you to sing on that. My message today begins sometime back in 1953, when our nation was at war in Korea, when the nuclear arms race was in its early jittery stages, when Joe McCarthy was persecuting political enemies, when the Cold War was freezing out visions of a nonviolent planet. A woman named Mildred Ryder began to walk across America. Her walk, she said, was a pilgrimage, focused on and hoping to inspire others to think about peace. In a world racked by a half century of industrial warfare. Beginning January 1st of that year, she marched at the head of the Rose Bowl parade in Pasadena, California, choosing that spot to gain maximum exposure, talking to parade goers and giving them pamphlets focused on peace. She then began walking east, traveling by foot to Washington, D.C. and to New York. As her journey commenced, she ceased to be, for all intents and purposes, Mildred Ryder. She had shed her name, along with almost all her belongings, and printed on a blue tunic she constantly wore was the name she would be known by thereafter: Peace Pilgrim. Peace Pilgrim walked across the United States continually between 1953, when she was 44 years old, and her death in 1981. After reaching 25,000 miles in 1964, she stopped counting. She wore children's sneakers, by the way, averaging about 1,500 miles a pair. On the back of her tunic was printed, "Walking Coast to Coast for Peace." She carried her worldly possessions with her: a toothbrush, a comb, a pen, a map, and some leaflets she would pass out to those she met. She never carried money with her as she walked and did not accept money. She never asked anyone for food or for shelter. She said she was traveling on foot and on faith. There were times when she slept in a haystack, a barn, or on the roadside. There were days, and sometimes more than days, when she didn't eat. She said once, "Oh, I never had to skip more than 4 meals in a row." That means, let's say, you get dinner tonight and your next meal is lunch on Tuesday. When she was hosted for a meal and offered some more food to take with her, she would decline, saying she didn't carry food. She was a 20th century saint, a holy woman, perhaps, someone with an extraordinary vision and mission. The question I'm asking all of us today is this: do you have a vision for how you want to spend your life? And has that vision translated into a mission, something that sustains you? Peace Pilgrim is my inspiration for focusing on these questions today. Let me tell you just a little more about her. Born in New Jersey, where my whole family was born except me, in 1908, to a close-knit extended family, Mildred, or Mill, as they called her, became her high school valedictorian, and then worked as a secretary in her small town. She had a great interest in theater, writing plays and directing them at the local Grange. At that time, in the 20s, she was a bit of a flapper and liked dressing up and driving her own car, sometimes quite fast. She fell into a troubled marriage with a man that her family didn't approve of, and there are reports of a good deal of strife between them. Evidently, he was attractive but unprincipled, like me. And they had many clashes around values. When she was about 30, she reached a personal turning point. When at a time of great turmoil, she tells us that I walked all one night through the woods. I came to a moonlit glade and prayed. I felt a complete willingness and without any reservations to give my life, to dedicate my life to service. Please use me, I prayed to God, and a great peace came over me. I tell you, it's a point of no return. After that, you can never go back to completely self-centered living. I had quite a bit of feeling as I read those words, and I think it's because, like most of us, there's a great disparity in my own life between that complete dedication and my own experience of only occasional willingness to have that dedication. She said that she began to live to give instead of living to get, and spent the next 15 years preparing for something she did not know for what. Getting rid of unnecessary possessions and meaningless activities. I wonder if many of us have been doing this during the pandemic. She was decluttering before it was a thing. One thing she decluttered herself of was her marriage. Her husband joined the army in World War II, and she left off there because she didn't want to support the war. As I've read about Peace Pilgrim, I've been struck by the parallels to another great soul. For when you read Albert Schweitzer's autobiography, it states, on a bright summer morning in 1896, I awoke with the thought that my own good fortune was not to be taken as something self-evident. In peaceful reflection while the birds were singing, I decided before I got up that I would be justified in devoting myself until I was 30 to science and art, in order to give myself thereafter to direct service to humanity. It was not yet clear to me what the exact nature of the activities I planned would be, but one thing was certain. However insignificant it might appear, the goal must be direct service to humanity. Like Peace Pilgrim, Schweitzer had this calling, this moment when a new vision seized him and had a sense that he must be of service. From this vision came his mission. He too found himself living to give rather than to get. Schweitzer was famous before he started his hospital in Equatorial Africa, being well known as a scholar, a theologian, and a musician. And before she became Peace Pilgrim, Mildred Ryder might have been remembered also, for in 1952, she became the first woman to ever walk the entire Appalachian Trail in one season. In the late summer of that trek, she seems to have reached a decision point as to how to begin her new life. In her words, the inspiration for the pilgrimage came at this time. I sat high upon a hill overlooking rural New England. The day before, I had slipped out of harmony, and the evening before, I had thought to God, it seems to me that if I could always remain in harmony, I could be of greater usefulness. For every time I slip out of harmony, it impairs that. When I awoke at dawn, I was back on the spiritual mountaintop with a wonderful feeling. I knew I would never need to descend again into the valley. I knew that for me, the struggle was over, that finally I had succeeded in finding inner peace, reaching the point of no return. The struggle was over, because now I will do this right thing and I don't need to be pushed into it. I felt a strong inner motivation toward the pilgrimage, witnessing for peace. I saw myself in my mind's eye walking along and wearing the garb of my mission. I saw a map of the U.S. with the large cities marked. It was as though someone had taken a colored crayon and marked a zigzag line across, coast to coast and border to border from Los Angeles to New York City. I knew what I was to do, and that was the vision of my first year's pilgrimage route in 1953. My life was blessed with a meaningful purpose. How many of us feel our life is blessed with a meaningful purpose? How often do we feel we are in harmony with God so that we are of greater usefulness? How often may we feel instead that we have slipped out of harmony with the sacred? These are questions for personal reflection for each one of us. I am fairly certain that few of us have the drive and spiritual alignment of a peace pilgrim or an Albert Schweitzer. I'm struck by the fact that peace pilgrims spent a 15-year period in preparation for her life work, ridding herself of possessions and ceasing activities that were not helpful to others. She once wrote, "If what you're doing will not benefit others besides yourself, it is not worth doing." I'm afraid that most of us probably don't live our lives with this kind of idealism at our core, let alone in preparation for a mission of great selflessness. I know I don't, though I am drawn over and over to that light. I suspect that most of us do have a sense of mission, but it is based not so much on a vision that we consciously sought and prayed for, as on needs that we unconsciously feel and feed throughout our lives. Now, in what I'm saying, I'm not in any way trying to discount the good hearts and enlightened souls of all who attend this church. It may well be that I've written all of this only to wake myself up, and that at some point you will collectively gather around when I finally become just a little bit more aware, saying, "Oh, here you are, Doug. We've been waiting for you." But for any of us who are less than totally self-realized, it seems to me that our sense of mission could possibly be described the way Russell Brand talks about recovery. He says, "If you're not working a conscious program of recovery, then an unconscious program is working you." I think that describes all our lives at times. whether we're trying to recover from some kind of addiction or not. We all have a sense of mission if we look closely enough in our hearts. It's just that our sense of mission may not be a conscious one. It may well be that an unconscious mission is trying to be accomplished through us. We may be desperate to have more money because we grew up without it and never felt like we had enough. We're on a money mission. We may yearn deeply for our mother's love because she was missing, unavailable, depressed, even abusive. We then look all over the world as we grow and journey to find that missing heart piece, that security that we never got. Our whole life becomes a mother mission. Of course, a father's love and strength and guiding hand may well also be a missing piece in our life, and we're ever on a quest for that. Winston Churchill, in an interview after he essentially saved Britain in World War II, said that he only regretted that his father hadn't lived to see him make something of himself. The adoration of the entire nation did not replace the father-shaped hole in his heart. It is almost never the case that we will get support from all we meet if we embrace a divine mission, what I'm calling mission empathable. Peace Pilgrim once said, "When I started out, my hair had started to turn to silver. My friends thought I was crazy. There was not one word of encouragement from them. Not one word. They thought I would surely kill myself, walking all over. But they didn't know that with inner peace, I felt plugged into a source of universal energy which never runs out." In the same way, when Schweitzer's friends found out that at age 30, he was giving up his permanent tenured academic position and a thriving music career to study medicine and go to Africa, they told him his first stop at the medical school should be to see a psychiatrist. When we plug into mission empathable, we will not always be understood. But the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's eyes, and in ignoring the guidance of a sacred imperative to fit in with the values of our friends and our culture, we most certainly will be led astray. We who join together for this service today are householders, and a necessary part of each of our missions is that of keeping the lights on and the roof mended and the leaves raked, which I was doing yesterday and surely will return to doing today. This is a legitimate path we walk, and also maybe a blessed path for those of us tied to that Dharma, those of us who may not find the freedom to wander this world without a penny or to sleep in barns and haystacks. We may not feel free to divest ourselves of nearly all our possessions, except for a toothbrush, a tunic, and some kids' sneakers. But we can, I believe, take on our lives as a mission, not mission critical or mission desperate, but truly mission empathable, in which we learn we live to serve others, in which we live to spread peace. Our lives, whether as householders or sadhus, will never be entirely free of challenges or struggles. We are in the midst of a massive testing time right now, and I surely miss seeing and hugging all of you, for one thing, and I am saddened by the losses we are all facing and will continue to face. But to quote Peace Pilgrim, she said, "Some people wish for a life of no problems, but I would never wish for such a life for you." I would never wish such a life for any of you. "What I wish for you," she said, "is the great inner strength to solve your problems meaningfully and grow. Problems are learning and growing experiences. A life without problems would be a barren existence, without the opportunity for spiritual growth." I must give you a few more of Peace Pilgrim's marvelous quotes. She says this: "If you give your life as a prayer, you intensify the prayer beyond all measure." Amen. And "if you realized how powerful your thoughts are, you would never think a negative thought." Was she a secret unity member? Also this: "I don't eat junk foods and I don't think junk thoughts." Doesn't that just make you want to be like her in some small way? I was happy and uplifted to spend time recently reading about Peace Pilgrim, and I want to mention, if you were not familiar with her before, that many of her interviews and talks were transcribed and published. You can find so much of her words and her consciousness online. Just search under Peace Pilgrim. You'll be glad you did. We all have our own mission, or really multiple missions. The problems we face are the training school, perhaps, for the next chapter for each of us. No matter what we do, our undertakings can actually be prayer in action if we are plugged into that universal energy source. So let us also remember how powerful our thoughts are. Let us live our lives as prayers. Let us endeavor to live to give instead of living to get. Let us walk with Peace Pilgrim and with all those who live their lives as a sacred trust on foot and on faith. And let us never stray from giving ourselves over to our mission empathable.